Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to an early edition of Break Through the Noise with me, Jennifer Lindsay. I am the Director of Digital Services at Eastwick Communications, and every week we chat with an influencer to see what makes them tick. Part of this is our influence project, something that we have as an ongoing task force at Eastwick Communications, tracking how people are influenced to make all kinds of decisions in their everyday lives. Today we'll be speaking with Kristen Smith, who is the Executive Director of the Word of Mouth Marketing Association, and talking about word of mouth and, you know, how it has evolved over the years from something that we've always thought would be in person and personal to something that is now, you know, something that we refer to online, because we see Twitter is a stream of consciousness conversations amongst people, and those conversations have clearly moved online in a number of ways through trusted social networks. So through the years, it has evolved. We're waiting for Kristen to call in, so as we wait, we'll share with you some of the things that we're thinking about at Eastwick in terms of word-of-mouth marketing, and I encourage you to tweet in with your ideas, links, anything that you are thinking about when it comes to word-of-mouth marketing and the meaning of it, because I think, you know, how do we define it these days? If some of it is happening online, some of it is happening face-to-face, advertisers have used it, you know, for a long time to be able to drive us to make purchasing decisions. But, you know, when we look at all of the types of selling, including business-to-business transactions, we see that, you know, clearly peers influence peers. So, you know, send in some links, some thoughts. Our handle is EastwickCom, so if you go to twitter.com/EastwickCom, C-O-M, you'll be able to find us. And please do tweet in with your thoughts and ideas. You're also welcome to email. My email address is jennifer@eastwick.com. And let us know what you think of the topic and what is on your mind when it comes to word-of-mouth marketing. One of the things I like to discuss when we have guests on initially is how they define a topic. So it looks like we have our guest here. So let's see if we can bring her on. Kristen, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Hello.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. Now, Kristen is the director of the Word of Mouth Marketing Association, an esteemed association when it comes to the topic of word of mouth, which I was just sort of blathering on about just now. And we want to welcome you to the program. Thank you for making time for us.
Thank you.
I love your bio. It's so great. You want to do a shout out to Purdue's alumni group?
Sure, that would be great. I'm a tried and true supporter of Purdue and the Alumni Association, so it's very proud to wear that badge as well.
So I'm here in the Bay Area, and it's a lovely sunny day. Tell us where you are and what the weather's like.
I'm here in Chicago, and I will tell you it's supposed to be 75 today, and it looks somewhat sunny outside my window, and hopefully it will stay that way, although I keep hearing it might get a little cool over the weekend, which is not surprising for Chicago in the summer.
Well, we have some colleagues in Chicago, so we'll hope that for them as well. So let's dive in. I was just, as we were waiting for you, I was just sort of going through some of the ideas as we at Eastwick Communications have created this task force where we are constantly looking into influence from all different angles, and that's really what this program is about and definitely inspired by. And so one of the things I generally ask people when we start these conversations about influence and then the different pieces of it, and I think probably one of the strongest pieces, which is why we were all at the agency so excited to have you on, is word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's something that dates through the ages. So you know, of course, definitions being important. How is as a trade organization, if I can define you that way, do you look at word of mouth marketing? What do you include when you're tracking it and looking at it?
Sure. Word of mouth marketing is both online and offline, and I think most times people right now are very caught up into the term social media, so they equate word of mouth marketing almost 100% with social media and online, when in reality, most word of mouth is still 80% offline, and obviously, though, with social media growing and the interest in Facebook and Twitter and how to use it and how not to use it is increasing, and we're seeing it everywhere. It's become so mainstream that more and more people are really starting to understand, I think, the value of word of mouth. But again, word of mouth is including both online and offline, and we look in terms of research and statistics and looking at what's happening in a full-fledged word of mouth program.
That's fascinating that you had said that 80% is happening. Did you say that was happening online or offline?
Offline. That is still where the majority of word of mouth is taking place, is offline, not online. Although we're seeing that grow, but that is the last statistic that we had relevant, which was, I think, done in end of 2007, beginning of 2008.
Fascinating. Mm-hmm. How are things like that, you know, I have to ask you, you know, because when I hear things like that, I go, how the heck do you measure that?
It's not easy, although I'm not an expert on measurement, so I have to comment by that. But clearly there are experts in this field that work towards identifying measurements in terms of who the, you know, they have like a grid that they look at who their influencers are, how you measure the influencers, how they respond. So there is definitely a dynamic and mapped plan as to how you go about measuring that. And and there are alternative approaches from, you know, one research company, measurement company to another. But I think the bottom line is that they do put into place metrics so they can try to do it as best they can. But it's still, you know, I think that's one reason why you're seeing more with online right now, and it's such a hot topic, is because you can measure that probably a little more easily at times than offline, primarily because you can see how many people responded to a blog, how many people took advantage of a contest, how many people posted videos, how many people Twittered about something. So you can clearly see those numbers, and they're hard numbers. They're tangible. You can look at it. You can know that they are correct. Versus offline, where it's a little more difficult to do so. But again, not my area of expertise. But we do have companies that do that and are extremely good at it in terms of marketing or managing that and identifying what those measurements are.
It reminds me of my TV days when they started, you know, because most of my career has been in television news, and so I've had long relationship with Nielsen, and Nielsen trying to track and doing the people trackers what did they call that? I think it was something like people trackers or people measure something. But, you know, trying to take in, okay, someone could have a radio on, then they're on the internet at the same time, and the television's on in the background, trying to actually measure kind of what's influencing people.
Correct.
Obviously, that's not word of mouth, but, you know, if there's a person in the room, then that adds an additional layer to the mix that then might be construed as word of mouth, and then, you know, so kind of trying to measure all of these things. And I think it's fascinating when you start thinking about what goes into the dynamics of actually, you know, trying to wire a person almost to figure out what they're taking in and measuring it. So I'm sure there is a huge part of science to that.
Yes, I'm sorry to interrupt you, and also I would still say that a majority, I mean, when you read and you look at statistics about how individuals are still making decisions about whether they purchase a car, computer, TV, whatever it might be, it is truly via word of mouth. It's based upon referrals that you're receiving or hearing about or seeing something about in terms of friends, confidence, cohorts, workers, whatever it might be. That is still the driving force into how decisions are made today.
Yeah, and you know, let's talk about that for a second, because you know, we have at our agency, which is a, you know, full scale communications agency, so we do all kinds of work, some PR, some you know, more on the marketing side, in addition to social media, which is my realm. And, you know, it's interesting because I think, you know, we have a lot of clients, and of course we are tracking client needs, that are both consumer, but a lot of business-to-business selling. And how do you see, you know, how do you see word of mouth affecting those decisions? Or maybe a better question to put towards you, and again, I'm throwing this at you at the last minute, but it's just
okay.
Something that you said reminded me, you know, when we look at the power of influence for, especially as we segment between business-to-business and business-to-consumer, how are people influenced by word of mouth differently, or is it different in a consumer environment where we think about, you know, McDonald's and, you know, trying to get kids to talk to each other so they kind of gang up on mom and dad to buy Happy Meals versus, you know, a, you know, technology solution that an IT department and maybe web development department kind of gang up on a CFO, CIO, you know, some C-level person to try to purchase or buy into. Is that different, or is it the same kind of word of mouth dynamic that goes into it?
I think it's the same personally. From what I've seen, read, and heard from our own membership, they are very much in line. I think the means to the end is somewhat different in terms of some of the tools they may or may not use, engage in B2B versus B2C, business to business, business to consumer, may be different at times. For example, an approach that you know, a major company might take in reaching consumers, such as, you know, doing videos or some type of contest, clearly may not be the same route that you take in a business-to-business situation, but yet the end result in terms of how word of mouth is engaged and the importance of it and the use of it is the same.
Again, I'm kind of putting you on the spot, but just to take that a step further, you know, we think of the consumer examples a lot of times, and I'm constantly, when I go to conferences, asking people this. So if you don't have an answer, it's you know, fine. But, you know, do you have a business-to-business example of some of the tools or a tool or a way that the you know, you said the means to the end can be a little bit different? You know, how is it different in the business? Business environment. Do you have an example?
I have one example, and it may not be the best example, but I'm going to provide it just because it just recently was shown to me again. And the name of this blender company is escaping me right at this moment, but there was a large blender company that their primary focus was these blenders that they created, but they were a consumer, a commercial blender. So consumers would not typically buy this blender. It would be sold from B2B, from this business to restaurants to whomever needed this type of blender. But because of the marketing that they were doing, and they originally the intent was be business to business, and they were doing videos and they were showing what this blender could do, it had such a powerful result that it went to business to consumer as well, and consumers started purchasing this commercial grade blender. Now, again, you would not, the company did not never anticipated that would be the result of it, but their blender sales have skyrocketed as a result of it. But in truly, the intent of that original campaign was not focused on consumers, it was focused on B2B, and they were trying to identify a creative way to get the word out to other businesses about purchasing this commercial style blender. So again, this company in particular used videos, and it worked very well, and it just so happened it worked extremely well for the consumer. So as a result, again, but that's the power of word of mouth, is that you're not controlling the message. And you're growing organically what you hope to be something that you're putting out there, but then the idea is that it takes hold and spreads like ivy, and you don't have control over it after a while, and that is the end result, is that not only did this spread from business to business, it went from business to consumer as well, and that's a phenomenal campaign that does that well.
So, yeah, my colleagues at the social media club that I'm a member of, and some of my colleagues that were at the event that I went to a couple of weeks ago. It reminds me of the analogy they gave of Alexander Graham Bell, who thought the telephone would be used, you know, who was convinced it would be used to broadcast news, like a wire service, and play symphonies. It was not built for the kind of conversation that we're having right now via phone,
mm-hmm.
At all. So, you know, it's interesting what happens, you know, like you said, as it spreads like ivy, it can mutate
mm-hmm.
into
very
something
much
else.
So.
I, you know, there's another question I'm, you know, kind of as we're thinking about this, and again, you know, I'm not, you know, I wouldn't presume you, as the executive director, you can't be an expert on everything.
Mm-hmm.
But just looking at this from a cultural or academic standpoint, when did we as a society, whether it be in the United States or elsewhere, start to notice this dynamic of word of mouth and track it, learn about it? Do we know when the tracking of word of mouth or the actual term was coined?
My understanding from the education that I've had here with the Word of Mouth Marketing Association is that word of mouth has been here since the start of time, and that word of mouth has always been used from the beginning, but the coined term word of mouth came about in early marketing campaigns in the, I understand it, between the 1940s and 1950s. There's never been a definitive date surrounded by it, but that people from the experts that started up this association, as they explained to me, word of mouth has been around since the start of time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I will say, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, too, in terms of tracking it, too, I think that you're from everything that I've learned, been told, and understood from our members who are the experts in this field, I would say that you see the tracking starting between 1950s, 1960s, and increasingly growing in terms of the ability to really hone in terms of measurement capabilities of word of mouth.
Which is interesting because that you said 40s and 50s. You know, Sigmund Freud came to the States, and I think it was 1939 was the landmark year that the U.S. learned about psychology, and psychology went mainstream. So it doesn't really surprise me in the following decade that we started, you know, looking at the things we do kind of every day that we, you know, kind of take for granted and start actually kind of labeling things, which is,
mm-hmm.
You know, whether it's good or bad, we start coining these phrases. But that's kind of interesting. It maps to, you know, kind of the psychological, you know, the need for us to understand ourselves,
mm-hmm.
kind of piece of life. You know, we talked a little bit about, you know, examples, but I wanted to ask you, you know, in terms of leveraging word of mouth, we all experience it if we communicate with people, which you need to do to survive. But who's really, you know, who in terms of, you know, the companies that you've had associations with over the years, and I mean, think of your entire life even.
Mm-hmm.
Who's leveraged it really well, do you think, from your perspective as a leader of this organization? And I mean this in, you know, you can talk about the short term, and or the long term.
Mm-hmm. I would say there's so many stories and examples I could provide to you, but I would say personal to myself, one a good example that I can easily give is Trader Joe's. Here is a company that does no paid advertising. Here is a company that really took foothold and spread the word truly about the value of Trader Joe's, the what they have to offer, the environment that they offer, has all truly been spread via word of mouth. From one person that went into that store, had an experience, and clearly a positive one, that then turned around and spread the word about that store and encouraged more people to go, and then in terms of being able to grow the Trader Joe's business. And
wow.
That's
been a long time.
Mm-hmm, a very long time. But here's a store, again, that does no paid advertising. You had customers that were so loyal to that company that went on out and created their own commercials for that company. posted them on YouTube, posted them anywhere they possibly could get people to notice their experience about Trader Joe's. Now, that is a loyal fan customer base that they have clearly, methodically, and intentionally grown to benefit.
Wow. Okay, so that's a powerful long-term example because I stop at Trader Joe's, and one of the things I always, you know, and maybe this is, you know, just the eye and perspective that I'm looking at, I always notice that there's, you know, there's every demographic. It touches on just about every demographic in terms of age, gender, ethnicity, everyone, you know, and I don't know, obviously, you don't notice household income. Generally, when you walk past a person, a millionaire can be dressed in their workout clothes. But, you know, it's amazing to me, you know, how it's always very diverse. You know, I'm another Trader Joe shopper. The only thing I wish they'd carry is Diet Coke, so then I would only have to stop there.
From a loyal Diet Coke drinker myself, I would completely agree with you.
So, yeah, I think, Hanson's is great, but it only gets you so far in the morning. But in any event, that's a great long-term example. Anybody who's had like a short spurt, maybe even that they meant to be a really long-term campaign and it kind of died out?
I don't know necessarily about dying out, but I know there's several, you know, shorter term or things that had taken hold and then a company kind of got involved with it because it was good word of mouth. For example, and I pardon my, when I say this is, there's a video out there and many people have heard about this about Where the Hell is Matt? And it's you can see it all over YouTube and you can Google it. And this gentleman was traveling around the world with his, I believe, girlfriend, and they were videoing him in certain cities, and he would do a dance to a particular song each time, and it clearly was getting a lot of attention because people were going to it, and a company identified this as something they wanted to be associated with and then put their advertisement to it, and I believe they help underwrite some of the expenses for his travel. And here is a great example of word of mouth in terms of this gentleman doing this, posting it to YouTube, and then a company picking up on that and taking advantage of good word of mouth and associating themselves with. Now, I think some of the interest in that probably has waned a bit over the last, since its original kind of excitement and creativity around it. But a great example of something that started off with really great interest and enthusiasm, and again, probably has died out just a little bit, but you know, he's still getting a lot of clicks, I think more than the average person. And there's other examples I would say too, like for example, Tide just tried to do a basic small focus word of mouth campaign that they focused primarily on online, is my understanding, that had good results but not great results that they were trying to achieve in terms of launching a product and getting some enthusiasm created around it. It probably didn't take foothold as well, but again, a campaign with a start date and end date. We also gave an award recently in 2008 to a company that created a campaign with Hewlett-Packard called 31 Days of the Dragon, which is BuzzCore, and they created that program with Hewlett-Packard, and it had a kind of a time frame in which the program started and launched, and that they sent out computers to 31 individuals who blogged about it and told about their experiences, both positive and negative, concerning the product, which as an end result was a very cost-effective campaign, increased their sales, had great word of mouth, and was a phenomenal program.
Yeah, we think about the long tail a lot, and you know, the value of online reviews, you know, as a peer-to-peer influencing piece that we you know, definitely, from my point of view, have tapped into. And then, of course, from an influence perspective, you know, just anything peer-related is so important and so key. I'm wondering, you know, going back to the Tide example, what do you think made it not work? Did it not feel authentic? Did it not really have a defined enough base?
I'm not really sure since I wasn't personally involved with it, but yeah. I will say from what I've heard that uh-huh. it just it didn't quite resonate with people, mm. and that it just didn't get as much traffic in terms of social media space that they had anticipated. So I don't necessarily think it failed. It probably just didn't meet high expectations.
Right. And, you know, one other thing about your first example with Where's Matt, you know, traveling all around the world, you know, there's, you know, people that you know, constantly, oh, he's gone corporate or whatever. But mm-hmm. no one, I think, in that position would, or very few people would turn down corporate sponsorship if it came their way. But what's interesting to me is that, you know, in the sense that we, you know, as people can sort of go out with friends and say, you know, is it better to build or buy, or is it better to acquire? And we look at this in terms of user forums sometimes in the B2B space. If there's mm-hmm. an active user forum, is it better to kind of do the Google model of purchasing something and kind of just continuing to let it do its thing and then slowly showing the presence of the company that's acquired it? And it's interesting, you know, that this company, you know, found this guy on YouTube,
mm-hmm.
You know, figured the buzz worked well with their efforts,
mm-hmm.
and then basically acquired good word of mouth through sponsorship.
Yeah,
I think that's fascinating.
Mm-hmm. I will tell you that there is we have a person that we titled WOM Enthusiast on our team here at WOMA. His name is John Moore with Brand Autopsy. He will tell you his philosophy has been that it's better to bake it, make it yourself and bake it, versus is kind of taking over kind of the as we stated, the other company that identified something already in existence. It's typically better to make it your own and do that. And I think it kind of goes back to the philosophy, you know, about what you do and who you associate yourself with and knowing that. But in certain circumstances, it's extremely important to be well aware of what's happening in the marketplace to really know and understand. So like that company that took advantage of that gentleman traveling around, it worked for them. But
yeah.
that's not always going to be the case, and I think that's the thing that especially companies need to be extremely aware of is, number one, associating yourself with an ethical partner and very transparent in the disclosures used, and number two is that you really are finding what is the right fit for you and your company and what you're trying to accomplish, because as you well know in your expertise, is that, you know, now everybody's thinking, oh, should I be on Twitter? Should I be on Facebook? Should I be doing this? Should I be doing that? Should we be blogging? Should we be, you know, posting videos? And, again, you have to go back to what are the objectives you're trying to accomplish and making sure you're matching it to those objectives and then doing that. Because all too often, and, again, I'm sure you've seen this, is where people feel like they're launching these campaigns, but they are a one step away versus being a fully well-thought-out word-of-mouth campaign that has a start point and end point, how it's tracked, how it's handled, and if it's not working, how you then go a different route. There's a whole strategic concept to that plan versus utilizing a tactic such as Twitter or Facebook, and they are tactics. And I don't think that's really understood by a lot of companies when they're dipping their toes into that field.
Mm-hmm. I mean, something we definitely talk about. We provide strategic assistance, but, you know, we internally, especially because, you know, if a client comes to us very excited about Twitter, you know, we're not gonna tell them not to be excited about it because,
right.
sure, it's the place to be seen right now.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to help them meet their goals, you know, through this tool. But we know that, you know, it could be acquired at any time. It doesn't have a business model. There's certain realities to it, and the data that's put there may not exist there forever. I just had a friend who realized she was looking at older tweets, I think. I can't remember why. I think because of an event or something. She wanted to see how she worded something. And her tweets from the beginning of time weren't there.
Oh.
And it actually started such a stir that the updates, but it's not a button, but if you see followers, following, and then updates went away for a little while. I think it's back now. But she kind of started this, hello, you know, Twitter folks. Her feeling was that she really owned those updates. Mm-hmm. But in reality, everybody talks about Twitter's ability to scale and all that kind of stuff. You know, maybe it never wanted to or planned to keep everyone's data that long.
Right.
And it's an expense they thought they could, you know, go without. And, you know, it's just interesting to see. So, you know, again, it should still be the idea of you know, leveraging these tools, but the strategy hopefully is the same in terms of how you communicate with people one-on-one and how you make that authentic, the authenticity, again, like you said, and integrity of the campaign. How do you make sure that that is there?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I recently had an experience. I attended a conference, and I happened to be sitting next to this gentleman who did not know me, did not know what I did, and was talking to me about his company's campaign that they have going on MySpace and how it wasn't doing well. And so I started talking to him about what the objectives were of the campaign and getting a little more feedback, and it became very obvious that the folks that they were trying to reach is probably not the audience that would be most available on MySpace. They taken a full look at their entire marketing strategy and looked at what they were really trying to accomplish, it probably would have been fairly clear to them that MySpace may not have been what they were looking for. Now, a piece of that could have been fine on MySpace, but not relying on the entire campaign generated around that particular avenue. So I think overall, I think more and more companies are starting to figure that out, that they really need to have an experienced professional that they're working with and looking at how they embrace all of these tools as an overall marketing campaign to what they're trying to accomplish. And I think that's a trend that we're definitely seeing, as well as the issue of ethical standards and associating them with a company that clearly adheres to an ethical code, which WOMA promotes, as well as, just ensuring that they are transparent and they disclose what they're doing.
I could not agree more. I get so frustrated when we go into as part of, let's say, the new business process, because I kind of touch on different pieces of our organization. And, you know, you go in and you'll find somebody is coming from an experience where even an agency said, okay, let's put you on Facebook. They put a Facebook page up. There's your social media strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going, oh, my Lord. And then I start looking through the fans, quote, unquote, and I'm going, okay, who of these people are employed by your company? Who of these people are employed by your agency? Mm-hmm. And when all of them, you know, the roll call's taken and every single person is known, it's failed. There's absolutely zero, you know, transparent return on participation. We're big fans of LinkedIn, just so you know, in case you have any LinkedIn examples as we go along. Because, you know, of course, C-levels are there at least to do their profile, and especially these days with the way the job market is and, mm-hmm. you know, the tools that LinkedIn is strategically timing-wise has worked out so well for them to build in, and the partnerships that they have, it makes tons of sense. Business Week Exchange is another one. Wall Street Journal starting a discussions section. So those are the kinds of places where I think B2B folks, business-to-business, kind of makes more sense. I mean, putting some of them on MySpace, it's just like, somebody didn't get it somewhere and didn't look at, okay, you know, I'm talking to a company, I'm going to gather their demographic information, then I'm going to map that to the best channels where those people are already gathered rather than trying to make them go to MySpace, because I guarantee you, I went to a client event last night and wonderful group of CFOs, and those professionals are not going to take their precious time to go build a MySpace profile to take part in your campaign. Just
no,
not going to happen.
Just not going to happen.
So we're at just over the halfway mark here, and for those just joining us, I want to welcome you to Break Through the Noise with me, Jennifer Lindsay. I'm of Eastwick Communications. Every week we chat with an influencer to see what makes them tick, and this week we are speaking with Kristen Smith of the Word of Mouth Marketing Association. And Kristen, I wanted to kind of dive into some of the questions that were contributed from various folks in our office, a couple of our principals especially, doing a great job of leading the charge of giving us time, space, and encouraging us to be thinking about the topic of influence. And, you know, as an agency, because of that, I think we really get the power of peer influence. And we have a peer influence program, of course. And you talking to all kinds of different people and organizations, we were wondering what programs or implementation strategies you've seen companies employ to leverage word of mouth.
Wait, could you please restate that again? I'm sorry, I wasn't really following that question.
Oh, that's okay.
What strategies?
Yeah, so when we talked about, you know, tools versus strategies,
mm-hmm.
what strategies, for implementation of a word-of-mouth program have you seen that has been really effective to leverage word-of-mouth well?
Sure. I think it varies. I think, again, it goes back to our earlier start of our conversation about really knowing the company and their objectives and what then strategies to match to it and to deploy in terms of seeking out the best efforts. I would say, though, that one trend that we are definitely seeing and recognizing is that, you know, word of mouth is being fully integrated now into many agencies as paid advertising. Word of mouth is becoming much more embraced in terms of this is a tried and true form of marketing that clearly is can be reliable and clearly is effective in how it is used. I will say that I think right now, for example, in I'm going to use political campaigns as an example. Word of mouth clearly is a huge attribute to the success of many candidates in terms of political campaigns, especially President Obama. I mean, you can't really go on to an internet story about President Obama and his race to the White House without hearing about how he embraced tools such as social media, word of mouth. People would have thought that his campaign would not have been successful early in the primaries, and then clearly right after Iowa, I believe, that he took off, and it all stemmed from several key staff members, and including one in particular, to the best of my knowledge, that embraced a very large word-of-mouth campaign and deployed it very effectively in terms of how he utilized the website, how he used blogging, how he used Facebook, and it worked extremely well for that particular campaign. But again, I think it all goes back to making sure you're matching tools and available resources to what you are trying to accomplish. So, for example, one thing that's coming quickly to my mind is Skittles. Skittles mm-hmm. took down their homepage of their website and have now embraced Facebook as their homepage to their website. Homepage for is the place to go to learn about Skittles. Now, within that same candy company, Snickers took a different route and said, this is not working for us. They're embracing their traditional website. So mm-hmm. it truly goes back to, I'm using a social media example because, again, that's what's most relevant in people's minds right now, as here are two means to an end result, but they've taken two extremely different strategical approaches within the same company.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, it goes back to matching what you want to accomplish with what tools are available and clearly having a delineated strategy and anticipated outcomes and an ability to measure it and spread the word about it. And, I mean, but there are also other examples of companies that, for example, Coke. Coke has, throughout the years, done a phenomenal job in terms of word of mouth. They've embraced different strategies throughout the years. They recently, this was earlier in the year, they had a couple individuals that started a Coke Facebook page all by themselves, had nothing associated with Coke whatsoever. They had over 3 million fans on Facebook for Coke.
Wow.
Now, that tells you the power of that brand. And in addition to that, what Coke ended up doing was they embraced the two gentlemen that started up that Facebook page and said, you know what, let's work together and utilize this. The two gentlemen got to go to Coke's headquarters. They met their marketing team, determined how to best do this. So again, phenomenal means to an end, but again, not a strategy that may work for everybody. It just so happened to work for them. So we see a lot of different ideas, suggestions, things employed by companies. For example, Sears is just launching here shortly a campaign called My Sears and My Kmart, where they have created a platform via a member. It's a member company of WOMA called Viewpoints. They've created this platform in which to allow the exchange of consumer comments with the brand. Mm-hmm. And I believe it's being launched this week or next week. I apologize, I don't know the date of it. But here is another way that these very tried and traditional, you know, brands, Sears especially, of recognizing how can we embrace our customers. How can we get them to provide feedback? How can we encourage them to post comments about what's happening with their experiences of these stores and make this a two-way conversation versus it just being a site where you can post a comment and not expect any feedback in return? So again, companies are really going out and looking at what is right for us. We need to figure that out, and then we will deploy tools available to us in terms of a word-of-mouth, full-blown word-of-mouth campaign. But truly what it comes back to, in my opinion, is customer evangelism. And I believe Andy Cernovitz coined that term out of his book, Word of Mouth Marketing. Customer evangelism, it comes back to embracing the end consumer and identifying what is going to make them turn around and talk about your product or service or their experience. And everybody has to think, every time somebody either comes into my restaurant, goes on the bus, and sees a sign, what is their experience? How are they embracing what's being handed to them or talked to them about, and how are they going to result in that? And honestly, and it's also about, if they don't have a great experience, how are you responding to that not so great experience?
Again,
it's a two-way street.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that really relates to, you know, kind of what we think of as potentially word-of-mouth disasters, bad news, negative news, even, you know, untrue information spread. How do you, from a word-of-mouth standpoint, suggest dealing with that? We have, you know, specific ways we recommend to clients, and I'm just curious what you would recommend or what you see companies based on, you know, or examples of how, you know, something really negative has gotten out there. And, you know, I mean, Domino's, take that as an example, you know, that gets out there. How do you deal with the negative word of mouth?
Well, again, not speaking from experience, not personal experience, but from member experience that I have learned through this time period of being with WOMA, is that I would say that, again, it's dependent upon the individual situation. For example, Domino's. CEO went on and did a YouTube video and, you know, responded to what took place at that particular location of Domino's. But you will see, his YouTube video clearly did not get as many clicks and viewings of his video as did the original situation. Although I will say his video that he did do was straight on, forward, transparent, and addressed the issue, and he clearly articulated, this is the situation, and this is what would happen, and this is the repercussions of it, and this is what we've done to resolve the situation going forward. So, again, I think it's really dependent upon the situation and how you embrace word-of-mouth marketing in a negative situation because, again, word-of-mouth is such a strong and amazing tool, or not tool, I should say, approach to how you embrace negative situations as well, that this can really either kind of help a situation in terms of nipping it in the bud and turning a positive into a negative, which is truly what the goal is in most of these situations. And I'm trying to think of another good example that I've recently heard of about a negative situation where WOM was deployed. There are several.
You think about the banking industry, and some of the you know, some of the names that have been bandied about recently, and some of them are going to survive, and you wonder if any of them are ever really going to be able to recover. And you know, from that standpoint, you know, you're really talking about an area where credibility in managing people's money is just key. So, you know, I can think of examples in the past where we've seen, you know, financial disasters happen, and people really hold on to that negativity because it's money.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, looking at, like, the current, you know, the banking bailout and the crises there and some of the names involved, you know, is there a word-of-mouth kind of crisis campaign strategy that someone can look at? For that level of business that you've, you know, heard of or know of, or that, you know, you would even parlay some of the experiences from other kinds of companies too? Because I think it's one of the trickiest examples, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not, you know, I mean, the Domino's example I love because there was so much conjecture in the social media realm about, you know, it was important that the CEO speak.
Mm-hmm.
He spoke directly. He controlled it. But would it have been better to maybe, you know, let him continue, you know, let him do his YouTube thing, but also, you know, kind of unleash the employees that exist and say, you know, we encourage you to take your video camera, say what you think about our company, even if it's not that great or negative. But just go out there and vent and post it to our channel. And the sense was that people, you know, they would see a lot more clicks because people are going to want to see what people really think of Domino's.
Mm-hmm.
And that they would probably have more positive than they would have negative. You know, and that, of course, you know, is speculation looking backwards. And I think we've seen that, you know, over time. But I think it's such a challenge when you look at, you know, banking institutions as, you know, maybe one of the hardest examples. Or am I just thinking of it the wrong way?
No, I wouldn't say that. I would say just because, you know, as you mentioned at the beginning, this is kind of a difficult one in terms of recognizing certain situations. But I would say the banking industry is a good example of reinstating faith in institutions that you need people to have that faith in, quite frankly, for the economy to turn around and to bounce back. And you see, like, two mainstays like Chase and Wells Fargo clearly have been a steady ship. They've clearly maneuvered through the crisis situation of these banks and the problems that they've incurred. They've done effective paid advertising. They've done effective word-of-mouth campaigns in terms of spreading the word, maybe not intentionally, quite frankly, but definitely I'm not familiar with either one of those in any specific campaigns they have implemented mm-hmm. since all of this, but I think they are probably two of the largest institutions that really have weathered the storm, quite frankly.
I can tell you, living in California, you know, Chase is doing a lot of radio ads. I've heard
mm-hmm.
already, but I mean, it's noticeable they've taken over so
mm-hmm.
many banking spaces that were left vacant. So I know, you know, from my perspective in the town that I live in, I'm kind of thankful because, you know, you never, you know, especially in these times, you don't want to see a lot of empty buildings and you want to hope that people have jobs. So, you know, from that perspective, you know, I might tell a friend, oh, yeah, Chase opened up. Isn't that great? You know, and so maybe they get good word of mouth just because I'm glad that, you know, to see my, you know, the main drag of my city continue to thrive.
Right.
You know, so that's, you know, it's kind of interesting when you think about that. But, you know, in terms of the companies that, you know, maybe are going to exist but are kind of laying low. So last night, actually at this event we were talking about, people were debating about Ford's, you know, approach to the the vehicle industry crisis, mm-hmm. And Chrysler. And I saw Ad Age this morning had something on the paid placements that or paid ads that Chrysler is doing. And you know, the general sentiment in the group was that Chrysler is not doing the right thing. Ford is. Ford seems to be more transparent. The people feel that somehow that they're listening.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have to buy American cars. That's
correct.
The reality of life. So in terms of their crisis and the fact that we're doing as a country everything we can to keep. To keep these businesses afloat so that people do have jobs and we don't have these cities, that are, God, I can't even imagine the poor state of Michigan and what's mm-hmm. going on in terms of trying to deal with an already depressed economy, especially in some cities in particular. Can a brand use word of mouth to reinvent itself? This is a classic case that we could have with a client, where they want to go quiet and we might have some subtle or not so subtle suggestions about how to come out of a crisis and really embrace word of mouth. What are your thoughts on that? Have you seen companies that, or even some current examples that I'm throwing out here where, maybe it is better just to shut up. Like in the Chrysler case, is it really good to be doing a paid ad when...
Or the peanut butter case.
Peanut
butter is probably it's a really relevant example for everybody.
That's not everyone, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think there's things throughout the times in terms of from the 70s and 80s when you saw brands or tamperment with medicine, or that there's certain brands that had experienced very bad situations, including consumer deaths, that have since been able to turn themselves around and been able to still be that mainstream product that we all use here in America, at least. Even from that point to the issue of peanut butter and the potential contamination and how that industry as a whole quickly responded in terms of trying to use every means possible, including word of mouth, to get information out that this did not affect certain lines of like peanut butter. It affected
uh-huh.
these type of products versus this product, and trying to educate consumers saying, don't just take all the peanut butter off the shelves. Don't, this is truly related to X, Y, and Z products. They used every means possible to launching a really strongly effective word of mouth campaigns, because as you now know, people have returned to purchasing peanut butter. And I'm not saying they did not experience a dip in sales during this time period and potentially some issues with some consumers, but they embraced mothers. They embraced the people that purchased those peanut butter products. They embraced children. They looked at effective means in terms of how to reach to those markets, whether it be via bloggers, whether it be via contests, via customer service experiences, whatever it might be, to encourage people to continue purchasing peanut butter, which, of course, they have. Now you're hearing nothing about peanut butter. Last summer, we all heard about tomatoes and what was happening there with tomatoes. You couldn't find a tomato in a restaurant for anything. These clearly there are incidences where I look at an extremely negative situation that's occurred and how they have since then been able to turn that around and move forward and continue forward. Now, there are some folks that don't turn around and can't continue forward, and they are now out of business. And there's definitely examples of that particular situation. But I would say, in those type situations, if they're not using effective marketing, word of mouth, and other means available to them to turn that situation around, that is a negative. And I think really good example that just popped into my brain is how certain companies responded after 9/11 in terms of whether it be the travel industry. That's a great one. You know, how they responded to what happened after 9/11, how they embraced kind of the human spirit among all of us and really said, we recognize that you have concerns about travel. We recognize these things, and here are the steps that we've taken to ensure as best as we can your safety. And JetBlue did a lot of great things after 9/11, and other companies did as well. But here's again where it was a very negative, clearly negative situation, and they turned that around to give people back that, to some degree, a secure level of we're going to go back to flying, or we're going to go back to staying in a hotel, or we're going to go back to trusting airport security, to do kind of turn a very negative situation into a positive.
We don't have a lot of time, but I wanted to ask you, because along those lines, I see, you know, and as we were, you know, we did a predictions post at the beginning of the year, and I think, you know, more and more peer reviews and, say, groups on LinkedIn are going to be places where we see more peer influence grow.
Absolutely.
And people talk amongst one another. I think that's been happening in Google and Yahoo groups for some time, but I think it's going to get more and more transparent. Are members really taking hold of this idea of reviews and other forms, or are there other forms that you can talk to about, you know, that provide that, you know, whether it's going to be positive or negative, we don't know the outcome, but ways for people to engage in two-way conversation with their brands?
Absolutely. I think we're seeing that everywhere. General Mills just launched a major campaign, too, with mothers, that they're seeing two-way conversations between consumers and brands. The two examples I gave, my Kmart and my Sears, again, two-way conversations. I think that brands, nonprofits, everybody has to consider the power of the individual consumer and what they may or may not write about you, especially in this day and age. And that truly is kind of the power of word of mouth, is how you embrace that feedback and turn it into a positive, how you embrace negatives and turn it into a positive, how you embrace every aspect and means. But again, yes, going back to your original question, is I truly see that you will find more and more a growing trend of two-way communications between brands and consumers, and identifying the best ways to handle that and manage it going forward. And with that said, though, and I would be remiss if I did not talk about this, is ethical standards and disclosure and transparency in terms of how people engage consumers, both in talking about a product as well as the brand goes and talking about their own products and what type of word-of-mouth campaigns they're creating, and the importance of ethical standards in and around those, because consumers are more educated today. They just are, and they're not taking, if they see something posted on a blog, they're not just taking people's word for it any longer. They're not taking that as, oh, so-and-so blogged about that, it must be true. They really are much more educated and want to know, where did this original comment come from? Is it, you know, they want to know, is it transparent? Did, you know, are they receiving some type of sponsorship to blog about something? They really want to know what is contained behind this post, and disclosure is so important, especially either if it's one-way communication and people posting things, or two-way and offering a dialogue or an exchange of information. Just that issue of transparency and disclosure is utmost importance as we go forward in maneuvering word of mouth and social media.
So when we talk about ethics and standards, let's talk about, you know, just kind of listing the things that companies that you would advise, and I would agree with you, would advise companies against. So you mentioned in that example, and I think it's a really good one, and I don't think we talk enough about this in general in the industry, but, you know, blogging for pay and not disclosing that, or for compensation and not disclosing that. That's something that, you know, is probably a no-no. Yeah?
It definitely is. For WOMA, we have an approved set of ethical guidelines that if you are going to become a member or are currently a member, you must comply with our WOMA ethics code. And our WOMA ethics code has some very fundamental principles that's very straightforward in terms of being honest, genuine in your opinion, that word of mouth cannot be faked, that we empower the consumer, that it's based upon the honesty of the relationship, the opinion, identity, respecting the rules of the venue, and again, being very well aware, too, of also minors being involved in any particular situation. But the bottom line is honesty, transparency, and identity, opinion, et cetera, is extremely important. And people can go to our website to look at our ethical code and what it stands for. And quite frankly, I would strongly encourage people to, if you're in, you know, even as a consumer or B2B or B2C, looking at, are these folks adhering to any type of code of conduct and ethical standards? And WOMA has it.
You know, and to that point, on our blog site, blogs.eastwick.com, we've provided to WOMA as well as all of their social media gathering points. So wherever it is you are, you can monitor what the latest is with the organization. Kristen, I want to thank you so much for being with us today. It's been fantastic. I want to thank everyone for tuning in to Break Through the Noise with me, Jennifer Lindsay. Next week, our guest is Sam Whitmore of Sam Whitmore's Media Survey. That's 1 week from today at 12 noon Pacific. As always, you can keep up with the latest on this show and Eastwick in general at blogs.eastwick.com. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Thank you.